Straight Shooter with Stephen A.
Ah, what's up, everybody? Welcome to this latest edition of Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A. Smith, coming at you as I love to do. Usually it's every Wednesday night with a political show reserved for SiriusXM, POTUS Radio Channel 124. I told y'all last week that I'd be here a couple of times a week, Mondays and Fridays in particular, because obviously there's a lot of stuff just for my YouTube channel. The opportunity to speak about things that I wanted to speak about extemporaneously off the cuff, just to get stuff off my chest. I felt that it's the right thing to do since so many people have talked so much stuff. And I've been gotten on, you know, from everybody, from family members, like my nephew, to a whole bunch of other people because I don't clap back enough. And I can assure you that I'm not going to make a habit of that. I just love the idea of being able to do it when I want to and having the luxury of being able to do just that. And this is the latest example. I've got a show coming at you today. I'm going to get into Michelle Obama and some of the things that she said over the weekend that I felt compelled to address. And I'm not going to lie to you. I'm doing it on behalf of men, not just black men, men, period, because of what she said. That's right. I'm doing it. Okay. I'm going to do that. And I'm also going to talk about, make sure that I touch on something in regards to the healthcare crisis, because I think it's something that we need to come to a conclusion that we really, really need to understand what the hell is going on, especially now that the shutdown is over. We all heard what it was about or whatever, but I want to bring it home and to make sure that we understand, particularly as elections approach next year and whatever, that we understand what my mission is. And if I haven't articulated that message before, I'm going to do so today to let everybody know what my mission is and where I stand. So moving forward, if I'm going to get accused of something, let it be the right thing. But before I get into any of that, I want to revisit something that I touched on last week. And that was my former colleague at First Take, Kerry Champion, and what she had to say on a video that she posted. But not because of that video today. I said what I had to say about that. It's because Jemele Hill, my other former colleague at ESPN, I think now does work for The Athletic. Obviously, she's been gone for a few years. She has felt compelled to insert herself into the proceedings. She says that she did so because her name was brought up, but her name was brought up by Kerry. It wasn't brought up by me. But nevertheless, she felt the need to address the situation and to articulate her truth and what was true and what she would call BS on something about and all of this other stuff. Well, this ain't a soap opera. There was once a soap opera called As the World Turns. This ain't that. I'm fond of General Hospital and, of course, Young and the Restless, with my man Eric Braden, who plays Victor Newman on Young and the Restless, and my man Maurice Bernard, who plays Sonny Corinthos on General Hospital. I like soap operas. Don't bother me one bit. But I never expected, since I have an official recurring role on General Hospital, that I would involve myself on it on my own damn YouTube show. But it seems necessary. Because people are out there talking as if there's fact, when in actuality, it's their opinion. And I'm the one with the facts. So since Jemele Hill wanted to insert herself into the proceedings and go there, providing her perspective, which no doubt should be respected, at least the parts that are true, or that are simply a perspective as opposed to being disguised as facts when they are not. Figure I'd take a turn at doing it myself. So, to recap, Michelle Beadle, former colleague at ESPN, who went on the airwaves and says she prays for my demise, my fall, which everybody has universally excoriated as well as they should. Not that it would affect her or her trifling self anyway, in any way. But it was right. It was nice of them to bring that up, to say that that was beyond the pale, because I certainly don't root for her demise. no room for her at all. I was proud that she said she actually prayed because I didn't know she prayed. With that being said, because she came at me the way that she came at me for yet the umpteenth time, spanning 11 years, I finally decided to speak up for myself. But not before Kerry Champion, my former colleague at ESPN, decided to go to do a video to post on social media. No call to me. No conversation with me. I was completely blindsided by what she put out there. And I had to find out about it in real time like everybody else. Matter of fact, my nephew was the one that told me about it. Didn't even know. But to remind y'all of what transpired, here's what Kerry Champion had said about me in the aftermath of Michelle Beadle's diatribe, which I hadn't responded to immediately. And Kerry somewhat took umbrage with that, but it was really more about Representative Jasmine Crockett, Kamala Harris, Michelle Obama, and of course, Kerry herself and Jemele Hill. These are all according to Kerry Champion's words. Take a listen.
Stephen A., I played that Michelle Beadle clip for one reason and one reason only. I'm old enough to remember being on that show and getting in trouble based on some comments you said about women and whether or not they should know their place when it comes to abuse or non-abuse. Ray Rice comes to mind. Not going to get into the details of all of that. But Beadle just came for you yet again, like she did when I worked at ESPN. I wonder, do you have that same smoke for her that you have for Jasmine Crockett, that you have for Michelle Obama, that you sometimes display for me and Jemele Hill? Do you have that same smoke? I'm sick of it. Keep the same energy. And I call you and I root for you and I say, hey, I got your back. I'm happy for you. But you keep that same energy, sir, for everybody.
Here was my response. You just said, Kerry, you call me, you root for me. Why would you root for somebody that called you out and Jemele Hill, who's your good friend? Because it's never happened. Never. I've shown you nothing but love. What are you talking about? You were hired at First Take in large part because of me. You stayed as long as you stayed and had the support of the people that supported you because of me. Do I need to get bosses to confirm that I'm telling the truth? You know I can. When we see the diverse people that come on First Take, black people, women, the list goes on and on. Who did that? That wasn't happening when Skip was there. That was me. What are you talking about? When have I spoken against you? When have I thrown shade against you? When did that happen? That is a lie. Yes, it was. But needless to say, eventually others have to get involved. Some for clicks, generate revenue. I'm not accusing Jemele Hill of that. I respect it too much. But that don't make her right with what she has now decided to open her mouth and say. So before I address Jemele Hill, let me show you what she now entered the proceedings to add to the mix. Take it away.
I have always credited Stephen A. Smith with the fact that when I was a columnist in Orlando and Stephen A. had a show called Quite Frankly on ESPN, he had a segment on his show called The Back Page, which he purposely and intentionally made as a space for black columnists. So I was on it. Rob Parker was on it. A lot of people were on it who were black opinion makers, opinionists during that time. And it is very true that being able to be on Quite Frankly and to be you know, sort of seen nationally was definitely something that helped me in my career. Make no mistake about it. And I'm not trying to discredit anything that you have done for me. But you saying that you helped Kara get to First Take, I know that unequivocally not to be true. And I'm going to just say it what it is. Do I think that you put in a good word here and there for Kara? I'm not saying that you didn't. But you made it seem like you scouted her at the Tennis Channel. You brought her over to ESPN, and that's how she got First Take. And I can tell you 1,000% the man that did that, his name is Jerry Madelon. You and I both know him. Jerry Madelon was somebody whose job at ESPN was to scout talent. He was the one who scouted Kara from the Tennis Channel, if I'm not mistaken. And for Kara to get that job was miraculous in a lot of ways. It spoke to how well her audition went. I knew, based off my own conversations with Skip, that Kara wasn't his first choice. So you were completely telling the truth about that. But you didn't know Kara from a can of paint. So to then suddenly reframe this story, like you're the reason that Kara Champion wound up on First Take, bro, I got nothing against you, but I'm just calling bullshit on that. I'm gonna just say what it is.
What I love is how former people from ESPN want to always act like they're the paragons of truth and virtue and that they're telling the truth and the rest of us are lost. Even those of us who are still in the damn building. Like we don't know. Calling bullshit. And I'm going to keep myself PC today. I promise a couple of people. I'm going to try not to cuss today. Okay. Be nice. Because before I say anything, I want everybody out there to know I respect the hell out of Jemele Hill. I respect her work. I respect the professionalism that she displayed throughout her years in this industry. And by the way, that she continues to display for the most part. I am not insulted remotely by any perspective that she has over this whole thing. She is entitled to her opinion. She's earned it. I have never, nor would I ever, disrespect Jemele Hill. But that doesn't mean that you get to create your own facts. You can call it bullshit all you want to. Respectfully, the one that's spewing bullshit is you. You know for a fact that that did not happen with Kara? Well, how would you know? I thought you were going from First Take. I thought you didn't know Kara when she first arrived. I thought you didn't have a relationship initially, that it was something that you had cultivated. How would you know? You don't. You know what story she may have told you, but you don't know the whole story. So allow me to educate you. Number one, here's how it went down. Jerry Madelon is an executive at ESPN, was there for 27 years before departing in 2015. He is absolutely the one who recruited Kara Champion. I don't know. Did I say I recruited her? You said, quote, it made it sound like, I'm sorry, we're both journalists in this industry, not just personalities. You don't get to say it sounded like. Did I say that or not? I did not. I never said I recruited Kara. Why would I recruit from the Tennis Channel? I never said that. That's where she was before she arrived at ESPN. I didn't know who she was. Jerry recruited her. So here's how that goes. Jerry recruited her. And then the VP for original content overseeing First Take was a gentleman by the name of Jamie Horowitz, who was over First Take, who was Skip's boss, who ultimately collaborated with Skip to bring me on board, who was made aware of Kerry Champion by Jerry Madelon, and as a result of him hearing about Kerry Champion from Jerry Madelon, met with her not once but twice. Jerry Madelon was interested in having her. Jamie Horowitz was interested in having her. And who did Jamie Horowitz come to make the decision? You're looking at him. Because Skip was running First Take, but Skip had his reservations. So it was not only up to me to decide if Kerry Champion would be on First Take, it was up to me to convince Skip, because he was the ultimate say. Kerry Champion wasn't going to convince Skip. You wasn't going to convince Skip, Jamel. Jamie Horowitz couldn't convince Skip. He needed me to go to Skip, which means I first had to support Kerry Champion, and then after that, I had to convince Skip to do so. That's what I said. Encapsulating it by saying, she wouldn't have been at First Take if it were not for me. See how that makes sense? By the way, in case you want to say it's bullshit again, and I'm not cussing, I'm just quoting you. I have a quote here. It's Jerry Madelon. Thank you again for the call. If it helps you with your commentary, please be clear. My role with Kerry Champion was similar to that with Stuart Scott. I found him and counseled him, but I was not his day-to-day person. Jerry Madelon. You have his number, Jamel. Call him. See, we talk. This is me. I have names. I have numbers. You need his number? I know you got it, but if you need it, I'll text it to you. Jerry Madelon discovered Kerry, recruited her, sent her to Jamie. Do you need me to tell you where Jamie and Kerry met? In Queens, US Open? You need me to tell you that? Do you need me to tell you the date and the time? Jamie Horowitz came to me to say to me, how you feel? Do you feel this way? Do you support her? I need your help with Skip. Sure. Just checking, since you said it was bullshit. Those are facts. Oh, by the way, how could I possibly forget? Let me not stop it, Jerry Madelon. I also got off the phone with Jamie Horowitz 2 hours ago. And I said to Jamie Horowitz, the former VP for original content for ESPN, who now runs Omaha Production, who, by the way, lives in California and is more than happy to take your call to reconfirm what I said. I said to him everything that I just said to you, and I said, am I telling the truth or am I lying about anything? He said, you are 100% factually correct. Now, who do you think the audience is going to believe? You who said, it sounded like you said, Stephen. Or Stephen, who says, Jerry Madelon, Jamie Horowitz, names, times, dates. You see, here's the problem. And this is why I feel compelled to address this. At the end of the day, it's not a big deal. I certainly, and you were absolutely right, Jamel, in your soliloquy on your podcast when you talked about how Skip had brothers and sisters on the phone, on the show all the time, because it was a spinoff to some degree of PTI to a certain degree, where you had Michael Wilbon, who was black, and you had Tony Kornheiser, who was white, and Skip always wanted to debate folks from opposite ethnicity. I know that's true. The difference was, is that you had folks contributing to the show while he was in search for the right partner. the people I've brought on board are actual partners of the show. They ain't in search of it. They're a part of the show. Ryan Clark, Marcus Spears, Cam Newton, Shannon Sharp before that, Michael Irvin before that, a Dominique Foxworth, a Kimberly Martin, a Mina Kimes, a Dan Orlovsky, a Rhett Jeff Saturday, a Mad Dog Russo, a Damian Woody, a Louis Riddick, a Jay Williams, a Kendrick Perkins, a Monica McNutt, an Andrea Carter, a Shanae Ogumike. All handpicked for the purposes of First Take. Which brings me home to the biggest reason why I'm making these points. If you were at ESPN Jemele Hill, it would be you too. I've shown you nothing but respect. Always. I never talked about your business. I never implied or publicized what happened with you in SportsCenter with Michael. I never talked about how you ultimately ended up out the door. And leaving of your own accord or with the assistance and being bought out. I don't talk about those things. You know why, Jemele Hill? Because I would never dream to. I don't care what anybody on ESPN says about you. That's y'all business and ain't mine. There's a lot more that goes on with a multitude of stories. I say nothing. I've been in this business for 30 years. Tell me when I have talked about my colleagues or my contemporaries without being attacked first. Tell me when it's happened. Tell me when I've initiated friction and vitriol and all of that, when it happened. I've never done that. Tell me when you picked up the phone and you've called me to have a conversation with me or you've needed my help and I've ever said no. Same thing with Kerry. No, I'm not some hero. No, somebody getting hired. Oh my goodness, it's about me and I got them through the door. No, I'm just a black dude that's in the position that I'm in that has put my career in jeopardy fighting on behalf of African Americans within the walls of ESPN and outside. And I turn around, and because I come to my own defense, never said a word about Kerry, never bothered her. Suddenly I find out on video, on social media, that she got all of these feelings, and then people are sending me stuff that she's done in 2023 and 2022 and 2021 talking about me. She left the show in 2015. If you were so bothered by me, how come I never heard about it? How come I never got a call saying, let's talk about it? How come I did get calls asking for my assistant? I'm talking about Kerry, not you. Why? I have done nothing to any of y'all, but have spoken up for y'all, support y'all, or when I couldn't or didn't want to because of one reason or another, I shut the hell up. You going on your video, Jemele, talking about, we'll talk about this privately and we'll talk about that privately. Really? Then why do the video? Because you were protecting Kerry? Protecting her from what? What did I do? Speak up for myself after being attacked? I'm a black man. How do you think it looks when y'all don't hesitate to bring up a Ray Rice or you don't hesitate to bring up something where somebody is coming at me because of things that I said? How do you think it makes me look or makes me feel when you go on camera and you talk about we were watching her on First Take and it was very, very uncomfortable? You never told me that. Not a word. We are in the year 2025. Kerry was on First Take from 2012 to 2015. And the first time I heard something about this from colleagues who supposedly respect me, who's supposed to be cool with me, or who roots for me and cheers for me is in 2025. Never thought to sit. Never thought to call me in 10 years. Would I do that to you, Jemele Hill? Would I call you? Would I go on camera and talk about you in a way that denigrates you in any way or that calls bullshit, and to use your words, to something that you've said or done without ever calling you? Text message, call, can we meet up? Nothing. Nothing. That's what hurts about this. But that's the only thing that hurts. The things that you said and some of the other things that you said that was accurate, whether it's people of diversity being brought on First Take, whether it's me and what I did with Quite Frankly, whether it's, I'm good, cool, we good. Because I'm not really hurt by anything. I just disagree with you, Jemele. The Kerry stuff hurt. Because it was false. But also betrayal. Because I know what I've done to help her. Jamie Horowitz is former executive overseeing First Take. Ask him. Jerry Madelon is the executive for ESPN, spending 27 years. Ask him. I got other names of executives that will happily come to my defense about how I have spoken up. A matter of fact, I tried to help her in recent years when she asked. But she didn't say that. Instead, y'all hop on this narrative that in no way can serve this black man in this position positively. My team and my people in my personal life never want me to address this. I don't run from it. I will never, ever, ever run from the Ray Rice conversation. I made a mistake by uttering the word provoke. Ladies and gentlemen, I have never put my hands on a woman. I have never hit a woman in my life. And you got people associate my name with domestic violence. Now, I'm not saying that's what Jemele and Kerry did. I'm saying others like Michelle Beadle has. Never mind that she knows a few people who could be accused of that. And she's befriended them. But with me, I utter the wrong word and I'm a child of Satan. I have four older sisters. I'm the youngest of six. Brother passed away in a car accident in 1992. I have 10 nieces. I have two daughters. 90% of my living relatives are female. I have never, nor would I ever, condone any man putting his hands on a woman, ever. Ever. I've come to the defense physically of women who had a man put his hands on them, with family, with relatives, and beyond. But people talk about me like I've done this, knowing that those headlines are going to be attached to my name, and it never occurs. To some folks, how that makes me look. And speaking, Jemele, about you were uncomfortable with how Kerry was treated. Weren't you on a podcast years ago where you were talking about that was Skip Bayless? Because I don't know if it was Maverick Carter or on the shop or wherever it was that you were, and you were talking about this stuff, and you were talking about your relationship with Skip Bayless and how he had sent you this email after you had said something in defense of Kerry. And you said, no, not Steven, Skip. Well, how I get in the name to, how my name get into it now? What did I do? I have nothing to do with this stuff. Y'all lump me in. Now, I know I'm a target, and I'm a big boy that I could take it. When I have platforms like this, I don't have to. Jemele Hill being gone from ESPN, I have been on the record in the past. That's a loss for us. Her perspective, her intellect, her journalistic integrity, her accomplishments speak for itself. But the whole First Take thing and the Kerry thing, you don't know what you're talking about. These are facts. And I have numerous executives who will back up every word that I just uttered, that will debunk everything you just said. There is no truth to it. You don't know what you're talking about. Not when it comes to that. The other stuff, you're entitled to your perspective. But what I would say to everybody out there, people are going to come after you when you're doing your thing. And if you're remotely successful, that's the way it goes. It's just always something that takes you aback when it comes to people that you respect, that you know you have been fair to, that are your colleagues, your contemporaries, or dare I say, friendly, if not friends. What I would ask everybody out there watching, tell me when I said something about Kerry Champion. Tell me when I said something about Jemele Hill that was negative, that impugned their integrity, personally or professionally in any way. Please tell me. I've been looking for the clips. I'm trying to figure out, did I do something? Was it 2015? Was it 2012? Was it 20? When? I can't find it. Knowing myself, I didn't do it. I'm like, fine, I'll look for it. But this is what we're doing. That's the problem. I don't mind enemies. I don't view either one of those ladies as enemies. Please don't get me wrong. I don't mind enemies. They're right up my alley. It really, really is. Where I regress, where I get a little bit tentative, I don't want to go there. I really don't. But there's only but so much a man's going to take when you keep lying on him and professing it's true. I didn't say anything all these years about Michelle Beadle because the hypocrisy of her verbiage, her statements, and her classlessness would have put me in a position where to prove it, I have to tell other people's business to make my point, which I'm not going to do. I gotta eat it because I don't want to incriminate nobody else. That is the only reason I have not gone nuclear on that woman. Kerry Champion and Jemele Hill, I will never go nuclear on y'all. There's nothing you can do that would make me do that to y'all. But I do know this. In all the years I've been in this business, I have tried to be nothing but supportive. You can always find somebody that'll say something negative about me. You can find some black folks that ain't happy, men and women. I could have done more. I should have done more. And they want to take into account of what they don't want to take into account what I already did. There's only but so much. I can take you to water. I can't make you drink. Can't help everybody on the same level. I remember seeing recently Marcellus Wiley talking about, you know, he's the executive producer and he's the one with the power and he doesn't remind us that, but nevertheless, such and such is gone. Either you got the power or you don't. All of a sudden, he's oblivious to corporate America, not understanding that even though you have the power, sometimes there's always an executive VP or above that has more power than you that gets to usurp your authority. Yes, I have authority. I'm not the final authority, but he wants to act like he got amnesia when it comes to that. Fine. Not arguing over something that petty. If that's what you want to believe, fine. But know this. It's been 30 years. 30 plus years I've been in this business. When do I attack my colleagues or contemporaries? When have I come out with a video calling folks out that I didn't even talk to? Before I quoted Jerry Madelon, I called them. Before I quoted Jamie Horowitz, I called them. When I brought up Dave Roberts' name last week, I called them first. When I went off on that other dude over a year ago, I called Bob Iger. I called Jimmy Pitaro. I called people to give them heads up. Where's my call? Where's the courtesy of, I disagree with you, here's why, here's how I feel. Just didn't want you to be blindsided. Just know that I'm going to say this. How come I never get that courtesy? Could it be because you know you're just talking? You have the answer to that question. I don't. I wish you well, Jamal. Still wish you were at ESPN. Wish you nothing but success in your future endeavors. And I took no offense to the things that you said as it pertains to your perspective because you're entitled to them. Only thing I took offense to is you acting like something was factually correct that you can't possibly know. You are wrong. You do not have your facts straight. You do not know what you're talking about when it comes to that. I have facts. I have dates. And I have the bosses directly involved, one of which you brought up who were directly involved, who confirmed that I was telling the truth and you were not. I am not accusing you of lying. I am not accusing you of what I've known others to be, where you're telling false stories on purpose. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is you don't know. I do, which is why I spoke. That's all I have to say about this. Y'all have a nice life. Continue to build and grow. I'll do the same. See you down the line. I got other important subjects to get to. Now on to my next subject. And, you know, it's really, really dicey because obviously this involves yet another woman. And this narrative, you know, it's me and I'm combating women, particularly black women, and all of this other stuff. I mean, it's getting ridiculous. You know, you can't disagree. You can't ask questions. Matter of fact, isn't it a sign of respect if, you know, men who sit up there and just dismiss and don't pay attention, as we should, because women are far more intelligent than us as far as I'm concerned. When we don't pay attention and we're very dismissive, you know, we're accusing of belittling. And then when we embrace it and treat it with the same level of fervor and respect that we would with men, all of a sudden it's an issue. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable what's happening to this world. You know, it really is. But I'm here for it. No problem. Because the next thing involves our former first lady, Michelle Obama. So this weekend, she was in Brooklyn and she said something that respectfully I disagree with. And she was speaking at the Brooklyn Academy of Music on Friday. And ladies and gentlemen, she had something to say that I felt compelled to disagree with publicly. Here's what she said.
Do you think that that impacts the room that we've made for a woman to be president?
Well, as we saw in this past election, sadly, we ain't ready. That's why I'm like, don't even look at me about running, because you all are lying. You're not ready for a woman. You are not. So don't waste my time. You know, we got a lot of growing up to do. And there's still, I'm sadly, a lot of men who do not feel like they can be led by a woman. And we saw it.
Two things jumped on my mind listening to that. If men, any man, generalized that way about the female populace, what would happen to us? To generalize like that. Men, we ain't ready. If some man said, women, you ain't ready. What? Think about that. Number two, here's what jumped out of my mind. Didn't we just see an election take place last month where a woman won the gubernatorial seat in New Jersey? And Mikey Sherrill? Didn't we just see Abigail Spanberger win in Virginia, the gubernatorial seat? Isn't Kathy Hochul the governor of New York? Am I missing something? Maybe I need to go back to the 2016 election with Hillary Rodham Clinton. Didn't she win the popular vote in the United States? Didn't she garner over 65 million votes to Donald Trump's 62 million, outnumbering him in the popular vote by 2.9 million? Wasn't that Hillary Rodham Clinton? Could y'all put that stat up, please? Because I want to see it. Hillary Rodham Clinton, 2.9 million more votes. She won a popular vote. What do you mean we weren't ready? What do you mean we weren't ready? Weren't there white women who voted for Donald Trump? Not just white men? Didn't the blacks show up for Hillary Rodham Clinton? Didn't Hispanics show up for Hillary Rodham Clinton? Wasn't it Hillary Rodham Clinton who spent the last few days neglecting to campaign in places like Michigan or Wisconsin or Pennsylvania or places like that while he was everywhere? Y'all remember that? How about 2024? When Kamala Harris was running as the Democratic nominee for the presidency of the United States of America. Yes, she did only have 107 days to do it. But whose fault was that? The Republicans, black people, Hispanics, women, whomever, nobody told y'all to hold on to Joe Biden for dear life until July of that summer, when there was evidence that showed months earlier that he wasn't ready anymore. And Obama was told that. Remember when he was walking around looking puzzled and Obama had to guide him off stage? But Obama was saying to everybody else, support him, support him, support him. Didn't you receive, Kamala Harris, that is, over 74 million votes? More votes than any Democratic nominee in this nation's history? But you lost the popular vote and you lost the Electoral College vote. And you lost the traction that O'Biden had gained for you in 2020. And you were hesitant to do interviews. And you were hesitant to answer questions. And you were hesitant to separate yourself from the Biden administration in terms of some of the decisions that they made, which you now admit in your book. But 74 million plus people still came out and voted for you. Myself included. A woman is not the president of the United States because we're not ready? Ladies and gentlemen, listen to what I said about Michelle Obama when I spoke about her in August of this year. Take a listen.
I'm talking specifically to you, Madam First Lady. You are not just beloved, you are revered. You are sensational in so many ways. I've been on the record on this show and many others stating, had you run for president, you would have beat Trump. I still believe that. If Trump somehow manages to circumvent the 22nd Amendment, which I don't put past him, and Steve Bannon and others, and he tries to seek a third term, I believe if your husband elected to come back, he would beat Trump. That's my personal belief. But you, who never was an elected official and never aspired to, could easily, I wouldn't say easily, but you could win an election.
Does anybody doubt right now as we sit here on this day, November 17th, 2025, that if Michelle Obama came out today and said, I'm going to be the Democratic nominee, I aspire to be the Democratic nominee for the presidency of the United States of America, who would beat her? It's going to be Josh Shapiro. It's going to be Gavin Newsom. It's going to be Governor Beshear in Kentucky. Who do the Democrats have that could compete with Michelle Obama? What do you mean the country isn't ready? The country isn't ready so you'd lose to J.D. Vance? Really? Really? Or you couldn't have a chance to beat Marco Rubio, who I think is the best candidate the Republicans have for the presidency? Because Trump ain't circumventing the 22nd Amendment and is going to be ready to be able to run for a third term. So if Michelle Obama is really, really serious about what she's saying, she's also arguably seriously false. Because I believe she'd cakewalk to the Democratic nomination. And I believe she could win it all. Do you want it? Can't knock you if you don't. You're the first lady. You had experiences at the White House that most wouldn't have. You would know better than most of us. But the bottom line is, if that's the case, then say so. Don't look at this country and point to men and act like we wouldn't vote for you. Yes, we would. Yes, we would. There's plenty of men that I know that will vote for Michelle Obama. And I can't imagine any Democrat who wouldn't. Class personified, educated, smart, excellent orator. The first man who would be the first man in American history also happens to be the former president who has a similar reputation by her side. Run, Michelle, run. Run. But if you don't, could you please stop blaming us? Neither one of us have given the slight indication that we wouldn't support you. Respectfully, Kamala Harris was not you. And not voting for her has nothing to do, for the most part, because you can't speak for every little person out there that might think like that. But for the most part, people who didn't vote for Kamala, did support Kamala, could be because of her being lockstep with the rest of the Democrats, how there was no immigration crisis and our borders were secure, which was a lie. It could be them feeling uncomfortable with her pointing out, hey, I can't see anything that I would have done differently than Joe Biden. No, no, we don't want to hear that. They can't have footages of you for the GOP to use, with you talking about allowing transgender changes to take place within our prison walls. They can't hint towards you condoning sex changes and stuff like that without parental consent. I'm not saying these things are factually correct. I'm saying that's what they were saying about Kamala. That can't happen. It's a very, very simple strategy for the Democrats to employ. Move to the center. Stop with all this far left progressivism. Move to the center. Be willing to acknowledge that working across the aisle is not something you can, not just something you can do, but something that you're willing to do to get things done, to minimize the chaos.
and a Democrat will be the next president of the United States of America. In my opinion. And I can't think of anybody that would be able to compete with Michelle Obama, and all the names I mentioned were men. There ain't a man out there, myself included, who can compete with Michelle Obama if she decided that she wants to be the Democratic nominee for the presidency of the United States in 2028. Stop blaming men. We support you. We supported Hillary. Crime bill with Clinton at all. We still supported her. Stop. It's not true. I got something to tell you that is true, though. And this is on the fault of both sides of the aisle. I'll explain what I mean by that in a minute. The last item I wanted to touch on, and this indirectly involves Michelle Obama, because obviously her husband, Barack Obama, the president of the United States, from 2008 to 2016, is the guy that's associated with the healthcare bill that he obviously engineered and helped pass, and that is ultimately passed. And that's the Affordable Care Act, which is also known as Obamacare. Now, the reason I bring something like this up is because with all the chaos going on in the streets of America and everybody looking at the latest shutdown, and we heard all of this noise about Affordable Care Act subsidies and, you know, how the Democrats wanted them to continue into perpetuity while the continual resolution called for it to come to an end. Obviously, at the end of this year, December 31st, it was supposed to come to an end, and those affordable care subsidies weren't included in the continual resolution that ultimately was agreed upon. So much noise has been made. Democrats have been going after one another. John Fetterman, senator out of Pennsylvania, along with a couple of folks out of New Hampshire, a couple of folks out of Nevada, et cetera, are really, really getting it from the rest of the Democrats. And Senator Chuck Schumer, who was the voice in the Senate for the Democratic Party, you've got people saying that he's betrayed them and he needs to go and they need new blood, et cetera, et cetera. We heard all of this. And I'm personally getting sick of it because I think one of the reasons that, you know, I'm not trying to be an aficionado, I'm not trying to be an expert, I leave that to so many others, but you're allowed to deduce that 1 + 1 = 2. You're allowed to deduce that, listen, at some point in time, we got to bring home what the real issue is. And when it comes to the subsidies and when it comes to health care, and Obamacare is constantly mentioned, what we need to confess is that it's not working. That's not to point the finger at Barack Obama. That's not to point the finger at the Democrats. It's simply to make the point that while it is highly beneficial for the desolate and disenfranchised who were otherwise uninsured, and now they're talking about over 24 million folks, additional folks, now find themselves having health insurance, which is a big, big deal. What's not being told in all of this is that when you talked about bleeding from the rich, because people shouldn't have all of these exorbitant dollars available to them in the richest country in the world while folks are without health care, the flip side to it, ladies and gentlemen, is that if it was hurting the top 1 to 2% of the population, if it was hurting the top 5% of the population, it would make sense. Regardless of what number you pour out here, they can afford it. The issue is that Obamacare, as the argument is being made, is leading to the eradication of the middle class. Now we got ourselves a problem. How could that possibly happen? Why are we having this issue? The reason is the fault of both sides of the aisle. Because there's a problem that's going on that they have done nothing about because they're not incentivized to do anything about it. And that is the insurance companies and Big Pharma. Did you know that since Obamacare was essentially, I mean, it was approved in 2010, but implementation really kicked in 2014. Do you know that over the last 11 years, $1.5 trillion plus is what it's cost our government? Did you know that although a lot of that came courtesy of subsidies, which were from COVID, which went on top of the subsidies that originally existed, that had a lot to do with the cost, adding the cost. Did you know that not only did that happen, but that's what the Democrats wanted to continue because they wanted to ensure that come December 31st, when premiums are skyrocketing, et cetera, and people are devoid of true health care, that that was being addressed so they could have health care. Sounds like a very thoughtful and heartfelt position for the Democrats to take. But what did you do when the prices kept escalating and escalating and escalating? Did you address the reason why? Not in an effective fashion. Because the real reason this is happening is because of the insurance companies. The insurance companies, you see it right there. 2010 profit versus 2024 profit in healthcare and big pharma. United Health from $4.6 billion to $14.4 billion. Elevance Health from $2.9 billion to $6 billion. Eli Lilly. From 5.1 to 10.6 billion. So one doubled, another tripled, another quadrupled in profits. Where do profits come from? Because the American consumer out there was told that, you know what? It's a cap of about $2,000 for healthcare in the year 2025. But it didn't take into account their deductibles. It didn't take into account the elevated level of premiums. So let's say hypothetically, you know, your premium was like $19 18 months ago, 2 years ago. Why is it 90 now? These are the kind of things that are going on because insurance companies and big pharma have found a way to make sure they get theirs no matter what. How come the loopholes weren't closed? Look at this right here where it talks about conditions that resulted in insurance denials, surcharges, or exclusions prior to the Affordable Care Act. It could be cancer, it could be diabetes, it could be heart disease, strokes, HIV, AIDS, hepatitis, multiple sclerosis, kidney disease, organ transplant, sleep apnea, cerebral palsy, Alzheimer's or dementia, asthma, high cholesterol, arthritis. These are conditions that resulted in insurance denials. Surcharges, exclusions. They could deny you insurance coverage before the Affordable Care Act. So the fact that the Affordable Care Act is in existence and that is not something you can any longer do, we all thought that resolved our problems. The problem was nothing stopped Big Pharma from getting their paper. And so when I look at it and I think about it, I say, damn, how come this couldn't be addressed? Which is why I was happy when Representative Chip Roy out of Texas, who was just on this show weeks ago, was addressing Minority Democratic House Leader Hakeem Jeffries when he said this right in front of his face.
They broke the system, and then they come here saying that we own it if we don't throw more subsidies, pour more diesel on the fire to the fire that they started. That's what's happening right now. That's what for the American people to understand. Insurance companies.
Bailout Argentina.
Insurance companies. 1,032% stock prices up since 2010. 448% up from 2013. 85% of the revenues for insurers come from the federal government. What my Democratic colleagues are proposing is an insurance company enrichment scheme. It's literally what they're doing is printing money in the treasury and giving it to insurance companies.
Plain and simple. Don't forget Big Pharma. It's all one and the same as far as I'm concerned. It's greed. Which is why we have to stop taking sides. And we got to blame all of them. Because what have you done? Lobbying and political contributions in the year 2024. CVS Health, $9.4 million. Lobbying, contributions, $2.9. Humana Inc., insurance, $4.8 million. And lobbying, $1.3 million. Contributions. Pfizer, $10 million in lobbying, $2.7 in contributions. Eli Lilly and Company, $6.7 in lobbying. Contributions, $1.8. Johnson & Johnson, $8.25. Lobbying, $1.79 contributions. Ladies and gentlemen, that's money going to both parties. So if that money is being poured into the pockets of politicians on both sides of the aisle, where's the incentive for anybody to do anything to close those loopholes and fix the problem, knowing it will compromise big pharma and the insurance companies? We know that Pfizer donated $2.7 million. What does it mean? PAC gave money. Executives and employees gave money. Affiliates or subsidiaries gave money. The point is, the money is pouring in from an abundance of tentacles associated with the company that's lobbying on Capitol Hill to make sure you put policies in place that doesn't compromise their bottom line. And while the American people are suffering, like we did during the shutdown, where folks weren't getting paid, the politicians were getting paid. While folks were having the insurance compromise, the politicians kept the insurance. And oh, by the way, the stock prices for the insurance companies and big pharma jumped anywhere from 500 to over 1,100%. So how come they can't fix it? How come they can't close the loopholes? Let me get back to the Joe Madison part. God rest his wonderful soul. Former voice for Urban View Radio, who came up with the line, put it where the goats can get it. If everybody else got $10,000 for me, but you got $1 million for me, and all I got to do is give lip service to the problems that exist, that dealing with you will resolve, but I never deal with it at all because I'll continue to get my money, but give the impression that I'm actually addressing the problem. Where does that leave us? Premiums are skyrocketing, deductibles are skyrocketing, insurance and big pharma taking us to the cleaners. And the eradication of the middle class is taking place in front of our very eyes. Why are they resentful to Obama and Obamacare? It's because of those 24 plus million people who are the desolate and the disenfranchised and the poorest amongst us who wouldn't otherwise have health insurance. And since it was ruled a tax, what happened is that people think that they're getting their money taxed and they're paying for somebody else's health care. So it's like me with my nephew, Josh. If I'm sitting up there and I'm in the gym 6 days a week and I'm keeping myself in shape and I'm healthy, but his ass is eating Crunch Berries or smoking cigarettes. Not that he's doing that, because he doesn't. I'm just being hypothetical here. And he's not taking care of himself, but I got to pay for his health care. I'd have a problem with that. That's the American people. Wrote down this philosophy that I want people to understand, because I wanted to really write down a dichotomy that exists between the liberals and the conservatives, just so we understand one another. When it comes to healthcare, what's the liberal philosophy? Ask my researcher to write this down for me so I can make sure that I read it verbatim. Liberals look at healthcare like it's public school or the fire department. Everybody gets it, period. They want the government stepping in with subsidies, regulations, even government-run insurance, single payer, because they believe the free market is going to leave people behind. So in their mind, Washington has to fill the gaps, even if it means more spending, more taxes, whatever it takes. Conservatives, on the other hand, say, hold up. Healthcare is a market good with a safety net, not a government takeover. They believe competition, choice, and real price transparency drive down costs, and that when government gets too involved, everything becomes more expensive and less efficient. So they argue the government should focus on the poor and the elderly and let everyone else choose the plan that fits them, because that's what sparks innovation, lowers prices, and elevates personal responsibility. Sounds about right. Ideology, belief, core, clear principles, diametrically opposed. The problem is not the opposition. That's what makes the world a better place. It's open for debate, edification, and elevation. The problem is when you're so dogged and dogmatic and you refuse to talk to one another and you never come up with a solution because you're not willing to talk to one another to find it. That would be bad if it was just that simple. Problem is by doing so, you never close the loopholes to address the insurance companies and Big Pharma. And as a result, they continue to get paid at the cost of the American people. And then we're all left to suffer in chaos and mayhem because of frustration about nothing being done, about those loopholes that the politicians we've sent to Capitol Hill have every bit of right and power to address if they weren't concerned about their own job security, their own electoral status, and their own wallets. Just thought I'd throw that out for everybody to think about as we move forward. Because as I move forward and I talk about these issues, understand that these are the kind of things that I want to address. Not to complain, but to find a resolution. That is what I mean when I say I have bigger fish to fry. It ain't about pointing fingers. It's about us being better. Let's get better so we can live better and enjoy our lives while we have a life worth enjoying. That's it for this edition of Straight Shooter with yours truly. I'll see you on Wednesday night. Straight Shooter with Stephen A., my political show, from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time over the airwaves of Sirius XM, POTUS Radio, channel 124. I will be interviewing live in front of a live studio audience Senator Ted Cruz, Republican from the great state of Texas. I can't wait. If you know anything about Ted Cruz, and you know anything about me, you shouldn't be able to wait either. See you Wednesday night. Peace and love.